So let me introduce who I am. My name is Travis Hansen. I've run 6 successful Kickstarters. I've raised over probably $150,000 with all 6. These are my 2 color books. I'm the creator of The Bean. It's a fantasy story about a kid that works in an inn and lives with a bunch of ogres. I've had 15 years of professional design experience as an art director, which will come into play to our conversation today. And I am now currently completely freelancing on my own, and I love it. I love that freedom that it gives. I've known Daniel and Paul for several years. We've worked the circuit together, let them introduce themselves. And Craig, I just met today, so awesome.
Hey, everybody. I'm Daniel Davis. I run a company with my wife called Steam Crow. We do create design, illustrated products like T-shirts and prints and stuff, but we do our own IP. And I've been a graphic designer for about 20 years as well, and that's a helpful skill for this kind of thing. And we've done a couple successful Kickstarters, both which I think funded within the first day or two. And it's pretty awesome if you get your stuff together.
I'm Paul Roman Martinez, and I produce a series called The Adventures of the 19XX. And I produce a lot of aviation and historical related art. And I've completed 7 successful Kickstarters, and I've raised just about as much as Travis, around 150. And it seems like me and Travis are always running one around the same time.
Which we're going to not do the next time.
And I worked as a graphic designer for about 10 years before I started doing my books. So I have a design background myself.
Hey, I'm Craig Inman. I actually work at Kickstarter. I am what I call the entertainment guy. I came out of the TV world, so I tend to work with Hollywood and film projects, and now bleeds over a lot into comics. Probably the most well-known campaign I've worked on was the LeVar Burton Reading Rainbow. I helped those guys. They raised about $5.5 million, and they wanted about $1 million. I actually ran my own Kickstarter for a comic I did last year called Lovecraft, which raised about $54,000, which was great because I only wanted 10, so my artist was very happy because I could pay him, so that was like a real bonus. And I actually have supported at least your Kickstarter. I know I have the Zeppelin playing card deck, which epic awesome. So, and let me ask a follow-up question to your questions, which is, how many people here have ever worked with or emailed anyone at Kickstarter when they've done a campaign? Okay, so that's one of the reasons I'm here, is if you want, when you're doing a Kickstarter, you can talk to an expert at Kickstarter that will help you with your campaign, will look over all that stuff. And in particular, if you're doing comics, write this one down, comics@kickstarter.com. Send in an email to comics@kickstarter.com if you want to do a Kickstarter comic, and somebody, probably a guy named Jamie Tanner, who's run 4 Kickstarters of his own, will write back and help you out. So
that's pretty important, because sometimes you send an email over there and you get an automated response, so it's nice to have a valid channel of communication.
How much extra time should we allow for that communication? Because I know once you start getting your Kickstarter kind of put together, it's really itchy to launch that thing.
It really depends, right? I literally had someone say, hey, I'm going to launch tomorrow. But Greg Pack, who just did his 2nd Kickstarter for The Princess Who Saved Herself, he's a friend of mine, spoken on Kickstarter panels for me. They did Code Monkey Save World, and then they did the follow-up. He emailed me the night before and said, hey, Craig, I'm going to launch. I forgot to tell you, I'm going to launch this tomorrow. And the other thing is, I can help with behind the scenes, like making sure the project gets a little more visible and stuff. Visibility. But then I emailed him and said, hey, I have a suggestion for adding a reward here and whatever. He's like, great, I did that. And then he launched the next day. He's like super savvy. Like LeVar Burton and team, I think we worked with them for like 6 months, and we did everything from helping them figure out what they wanted to kickstart to the messaging and all that kind of stuff.
I think you're saying something pretty important, where it's a lot of work to put together a Kickstarter. You don't just throw it up and cross your fingers. You got to do some of the homework, the grunt work, and stuff like
yeah,
that.
You really want to lay the groundwork. In an ideal world, like personally me being at Kickstarter, I would like to see like 4 to 6 weeks ahead of time so that I can help give you not only advice on your project page and your rewards and your video, but also on your outreach plan, because that's really one of the key, and you guys know this because you're totally so successful at it, but the Kickstarter page is the one thing, but telling people about it is
well, and guys,
key.
Guys, like on our level, we're all super indie, we're not Greg Pak, we're not people like that, so I started my groundwork a year before I did my first Kickstarter, and that's going out to conventions, cultivating your audience, creating a mailing list. That's stuff that you have to do for yourself.
Talking about and revealing your work on it as you go. I mean, that's super important early on. You know, as soon as I start one, I let our fans know, hey, this is what we're working on, so you know what's coming.
I started as a webcomic, actually, and was publishing it on my own as a small little comic. And then when I got everything combined, it was really neat because the year I met Paul, I was nominated for an Eisner, and Paul was nominated for the Manning Award, wasn't it? Mm-hmm. And so that's where we met, was at the Eisners. And but I didn't launch my Kickstarter until after. I mean, this comic was running online for almost 3 years before I decided to launch my Kickstarter. And I'm very grateful I did that because I had built that audience up who was very supportive, waiting for the book to come out. So, you know, one of the fears that I think, well, people have when they're trying to publish, whether it's indie or professional, is you want to hide it. You know, I don't want anyone to steal my idea. Well, if you hide that idea, you'll never build your audience. Two, honestly, no one's really going to steal it.
Yeah.
I'm really sorry, especially if you're putting it out online for free, so people, your name gets pretty recognized with your art. And unless you're blatantly stealing it from somebody else where you're going to get called on it, there's really not much to worry. I mean, you're taking a gamble. That's what it is. You're putting yourself out there and you're building a brand so people can see what you're doing. And the most important thing, I think, is realizing that Kickstarter is not a lifestyle funding platform. It is nearly a platform to fund a project so that you don't really have to buy material. It allows you to finish something and then give something back. And a lot of people tend to merge them together going, I want this to be my lifestyle, so I put my reward way out there of what I need, and in reality are shooting themselves in their foot instead of trying to make it realistic goals. And then if you do $50,000, or for the last book that we just did, it just closed about a month ago, I only wanted $6,000, and we ended up getting $21,000. Well, I wasn't expecting the $21,000. I got that $6,000, and it was great to go, hey, look, we did more than what I thought we were going to do, and that allows me to do more things.
Yeah, can I mean,
yeah, jump
just
in
to interrupt me anytime I'm talking too much, guys, please, because it's your panel. But when you set your goal, I always tell people, ask for what you need, not what you want. You can always go over and never under in Kickstarter. Kickstarter is an all-or-nothing platform, and the reason it's all-or-nothing is it protects you, the creator, and it protects the backers. As a creator, you don't want to say, I need $20,000 to do a project. Well, I got $10,000, and I got to keep that, but now I actually can't fulfill my project,
right.
So now I'm taking people's money, right? So you don't want to do that. And then as a backer, you know that you won't get charged unless the creator has enough money to actually fulfill the project. So what you want to do is, like, if you want $21,000, but you can do the project for $6,000, but legitimately do it, not like I might be able to do it if, you know, I get
make
really
it
lucky,
legit.
But, yeah, like, get a legit number. But then ask for six, because you can always get to 21, but, you know, you can't get it if you don't. If you asked for 21 and got 20, you wouldn't get it, but you might have been like, well, I would have taken 20. You know, I've run into that quite a bit.
Where, so part of that equation where you're figuring out costs and deciding what your goal should be, you got to figure out the Kickstarter's expenses, the cut they're going to take, and then you have to figure out shipping. And shipping is going to be a very large cost. So it's very
shipping
important.
And printing is the largest cost for comics and games.
This book was $14,000 worth of shipping expenses. We raised $46,000, but 14 of it, yeah, was out the door to shipping.
Yeah, of my $54,000, about $20,000, because we're printing a bunch of stuff, is going to printing and shipping, and the rest of it's really going to my artists. And I didn't take any money myself.
Yeah, it'd be really stringent. I mean, think about, you know, are you going to put the product in a bag? You know, figure out those little costs, and also figure out your ideal stretch goals ahead of time, because it's really easy to get excited, you know, early on. Oh, you're doing really great. Oh, we need some stretch goals. Oh my gosh, and start adding to this that you didn't plan for. Figure out those stretch goals even before you start, so you know those costs, because it's really easy. I've seen it before where people get way out of whack and they're like, I did really good and I lost money.
Yes, that's common.
And Craig made a really great point about paying his artist. Here's the deal. Yeah. As indies, you know, we're used to doing it all ourselves. You know, we're the self-made guy where you build it, you write it, and then you draw it, and then boom, you don't have to pay the artist. I don't have to pay me. It's kind of nice. But I'm involved in three other Kickstarters that I did not have anything to do with except the art. And I got paid up front for those costs. You know, they're willing to front the money because they believe in it, which made me a lot more happy to do the work for them. And all three of their Kickstarters funded because they want, you know, name. They like having that name, but pay the artist. Pay them realistically. Don't just offer them pennies on the dollar. Pay them for what they're worth. And whether it's game art or whether it's, you know, and that goes to the deal of getting someone to design your page effectively. And a lot of people think that if I just have text and explain this whole project that someone's going to fund me, no, it's actually not. Do your research and actually look at successful Kickstarters before and look at ones that weren't successful and go, what worked and what didn't. For me, when I did the Bean books, they're black and white books, and so they're fantasy, and so they have a genre that's just kind of just narrow. I knew it was narrow. The first book we raised $7,000, the second one we raised $8,000, and the next one we raised $15,000. But then my color books, which were totally different, I took a completely different approach, and I went and I looked at Creature Box.
Oh, yeah.
That is a fantastic design for a Kickstarter.
Yeah.
And I went and modeled my entire page to look like Creature Box, not just the art style. I didn't want the art style to be it. I wanted it to be my own. But the dynamic of the layout. And here's the difference. $15,000 was my last one. $46,000 was this one. What a difference in just taking the extra time to make sure the layout is good and functional. Don't just throw art up there. Make it functional. Make it, you know, the text big enough to read. I like showing all my rewards that you can see all the pictures of the rewards. I like
the more imagery you can use on a Kickstarter page, the better, especially from a comics project. So if you're a writer, and a lot of writers do bring their projects, like find an artist and work with them, because what's going to sell a visual project like a comic is the art, right? So the more art you can put, if you look at my project, I think I had like, I don't know, 15 pages of art, and the number, it didn't matter what I wrote on that page, the number one comment was, art is amazing, I want to back the project, and you know, that's Dan Govar, my artist. So.
Oh yeah, Dan's got gorgeous work.
Oh yeah, it really is.
He's here today too, if you guys.
He does great commissions.
I think another aspect, I'll just jump into a whole other area, is planning how you're going to fulfill this and the timeline for that, and be really realistic about that. I lucked out and actually delivered. We had a bunch of problems with our. We did this Kickstarter called Alter Egos, which was like these T-shirt designs of What Ho and Lovecraft and these other guys.
Dude, rescued. How did I not? I'm like a Lovecraft fan. How did I not know that?
Well, stop by the Steamboat booth and pick one up.
Anyway, it was kind of like what these tragic heroes of literature would have done if they had done something else and not died miserably. Anyway,
poor and miserably.
Yeah. But we had a bunch of problems. Like, I planned it to the T. Like, I really figured out my whole schedule. I padded it with extra weeks, and everything was great. And my screen printer, we had a huge deluge of rain in Phoenix, and my screen printer flooded and lost 2 weeks of production time. And then things go wrong. Man, things go wrong every time. And they're not, like, devastating, but things can go wrong.
Something's going to go wrong.
I padded the crap out of this thing in time, and I ended up delivering exactly the day promised, which is great, because that's really important to me, and I think it should be important to all of you as well, is, man, really do what you promise.
Well, especially if you want to go back and do another one later, then people remember that. They remember that you delivered on time, and you delivered what you said you would.
And your reputation is everything, you know, these days, I think. You know, you don't want to screw people over. You don't want to disappoint them. You want them to return and support your business even outside of Kickstarter.
By the way, a whole bunch of Kickstarter projects just got delayed because there was a strike at the dock where they received, because everything prints overseas.
My book's on boat right now, and it's like, I'm looking every day. It's like, will they come through? Will it be cleared up in time?
Yeah. So how do you plan for a strike at a dock?
You can't fix that.
So just pad your time. Yeah.
You can't do anything about that.
Although you can, the one thing I would say, if you do, and this is what we tell people all the time, Kickstarters frequently experience delays because a lot of time it's something that hasn't been done before. But if that happens, just update your backers. Just send them a note and be like, hey, you're not going to believe this. There's a strike at the dock. You know what I mean? Like, send them a link to the article about it in the New York Times. and be like, it's out of my hands. And people are very understanding.
Well, communication is pretty important along the whole way. I've seen guys that are big in the industry, have been making comics for 20 or 30 years, and they have this Kickstarter that's failing. And I'll go look at their page, and there's no comments, there's no updates. They literally put the page up and walked away and came back 30 days later.
Yeah.
You can't do
that's
that.
That's not going to work.
Especially as an indie person. If one of those guys can't do it, then we can't do it.
And the point is also that communication, let them know what's going on. People, you know, the backer, I found this, and I don't know if you guys, they want to be involved in the whole project. They love the prints. We'll get your hand right in 1 second, darling. So just, but they want to be involved. So your communication is key. And I like padding my not my numbers, but I like padding the date when it's going to come. So when we did Tanner Jones, which was the one I did last year, I told everybody they were going to get the book in February. I set my date for February, almost a year away from when I was working on the project. No one complained. No one was upset over it because they knew what was going on. And everybody was jazzed when they got it before Christmas.
Under promise, over deliver.
Yeah, and pad. By the way, pad your numbers by like 20% because you will come across unexpected costs. And so, if you said you were going to do $6,000, all of a sudden you're going to find, oh my god, the project's $7,200. So, and like we always say, pad your time and pad your money because you can't plan for the unexpected.
And Kickstarter will take what, 5%?
Kickstarter takes 5%,
and the bank takes about 3 to 5%.
Yeah,
as well.
The credit card processing. So we switched over from Amazon to a company called Stripe.
Thank you.
Yeah, I know. It's much easier, quicker. But they will take 3 to 5% of your transaction. So we always say plan around 10% of what we call platform fees, 5% for Kickstarter, and then 3 to 5% for the credit card processing.
And you'll lose about 1 to 2% of your backers will not be able to fulfill that reward. Their credit card will either not get processed or whatever, and they get dropped. So even figure that in. You know, you can lose. And it sucks if it's a big backer, like a $1,000 backer or $500, and their credit card does not go through. You just lost a grand.
Yeah, it's disappointing.
Yeah, sometimes what happens is because Kickstarters run over 30 days, if you have a lot of backers, somebody in that time period will move, and then their credit card won't process until they go through and update it, and then sometimes they never come back and update it. So there's like around 1% rate of drops, although if you happen to have, if it's a drop of a big backer,
I think I lost a $300 or $200.
Yeah, I agree. There's always that 1 to 2% people that drop, and then there's always another 1 or 2% that just never fill out their surveys.
So what is the policy?
Yeah, then
that,
you don't. Yeah, then you don't have to.
Well, it sucks if you have something that's
so the way it averages out.
If you have something that's limited edition, then that's hard.
Yeah,
to
that's a problem for me. I still have people that haven't told me what size and what T-shirt they want, like 6 months, 8 months later, and
that's very typical.
At what point do we like? What if
you make a good faith effort to contact them, and if they don't respond, then you can't, you know, it's out of your hands, but that's the policy is basically like, let them know that, you know, they need to send you the...
I usually say at a certain point, I just say, look, this is it, I'm down to, I've tried to get a hold of you over and over again, and you've had your chance, come see me, hopefully I'll still have it, but I just can't wait for
you just make what's a reasonable effort.
Yeah.
You had a question. No. We'll take questions through the whole time. I don't care.
So when you offer stuff like T-shirts and things that are outside of the project itself, or outside of the products that you're offering, how do you deal with that financially? Is that something that's
you need to figure that out as you put your goal for the reward that you want. If you offer shirts, I guarantee that's going to add $5 to that each item, because that shirt's going to be between $5 to $10 to print, depending on how you, well, or you can print it yourself, but you still have to buy the supplies for that.
And your packaging size might increase, so that
you run into
the weight does for sure.
If you add a big print with a small book, you're sending 2 packages to every customer. International is $25 per package almost.
Yeah, prints are hard that way.
I got killed. In fact, on my last one, I got killed with my international. People just didn't want to pay the extra 20 for shipping to help international. And it's just something that you just have to kind of figure in that's going to happen. It's just important that you make your rewards realistic that won't kill you in the process. So I would focus on your book or your project, whatever that is, and make that T-shirt a stretch goal where you can actually figure that extra cost in at a later date. Keep your rewards connected to your book. I actually, with mine, I give away original custom pieces. I'll give you a $300 commission. One of the best rewards I've ever done was cameos in the next book.
Oh, yeah.
Not the current book that's being kickstarted, but the book that is not even going to be printed for 2 years. And they're expensive, but egos, you want to stroke egos because that's what this is about. And people dig those egos. And I got six on my last one. One reward for this one, we did it at a $2,000 reward, and we would call you the captain of the whole Kickstarter, and it was gone within 20 minutes. Somebody just wanted to be called the captain of the Kickstarter.
Can I tell you some of the best, the best things that you can do? First of all, think of things that don't require shipping, right? So think
Amen.
Of digital copies. Think of, I'll name a character after you in the book, or I'll draw a character, and those can be levels, like, for this level, and that's what I did in mine, right? For this level, you got a character named after you. For this level, you got a character that's drawn after you.
Those are
I actually,
awesome.
Yeah, I come from the world of TV, so I actually created an executive producer credit for my comic. And I did it kind of as a joke.
That's what we did the captain one. It was a joke.
Yeah, and it was like $400, and it was the first reward that went. And what I offered that person was not only would they just get the credit, but I would send them the script and the art, and then they could comment on it. And they actually had a great comment that saved a mistake in the book. So now I had someone paying me to help me. But it worked out for everybody. Like, they were really happy. I was really happy. The other thing, if you're doing a comic project, is make flat rewards. So all of my rewards that weren't the comic were a postcard, a sticker, anything that I could put in with the book, a signed book plate.
If you don't have to change the packaging and you can slip it in there, then that's a success.
Yeah, that's really great.
I changed the size of my prints to match the current size of the book.
Yes.
So seriously, because it sucks when you send two packages, and my wife is my fulfillment manager. and if you got to, so there's a couple things, we hit fulfillment really quick. With USPS, they don't care if you bring 900 packages into, the USPS office, because they're going to process each one at a time. But everybody behind you and that little five-year-old at your side that's related to you, that's wondering why I'm here for 7 hours, that's not good. You can set it up that there's a couple ways you can go about it to save you time and energy. USPS will come and pick up at your house.
Yeah.
If you have multiple.
These guys are pros.
The other thing is I got to admit, I love them, and I'm grateful that Paul turned me on to these guys, BackerKit.
Yeah.
BackerKit is phenomenal. I saved $4,000 in shipping through BackerKit alone.
Yeah, there's a lot of online places where you can sign up for cheaper shipping, but you have to do subscriptions and things like that. Yeah, and if you sign up for BackerKit, it's kind of built in. They have that cheaper shipping tier level.
It's great. Great. They take a percentage. They're going to take a percentage of what it is, depending on the level. But
it sounds like you made more money.
I made more money
than their percentage.
Yeah. Every time I've used it, because you can continue to make sales through BackerKit as you're fulfilling. Every time I've used BackerKit, I've made way more than their cost.
It's been very nice.
Have you guys used Amazon for fulfillment?
Nope. No. I haven't.
I looked into it briefly, and it was like, whoa, too complicated. I mean, they have to ship them. You have to ship them a bunch of stuff. And they're going to take a cut. Whereas BackerKit, you still fulfill it yourself. It's just this whole online thing that pulls all your backers from Kickstarter, separates them by package level. So it's more a program you're using, not a physical fulfillment
and
service.
Invest in a thermal printer for the they're not labels. They're about $250 for labels.
I use a Dymo. It's a great label printer.
And you can batch it out, so you can run 600.
Yeah, if you plan it right, you can do a whole pledge level of 200 backers and just click it, print once, and it just prints them all, and then you just stick them on.
And then you can deal with individual customs and international shipping really well, too. You can actually layer that up.
Well, and I can hit international shipping again, is what you want to do is take your book, or if it's not made, a book similar to your size, put it in a box, put it on a scale. Enter all the info in, go to USPS.com, go on Google Maps, find a Starbucks in Paris and your address, and just put in both addresses and just get an idea. Do it again for Australia. Those are two of the most expensive places
I
ship to.
Yeah, Australia is rough.
Yeah, and Australians, they speak English pretty much. And so I ship a lot of stuff to there. They're big fans of English comics. So.
It can cost you $45 to ship a $5 book to Australia. So you really want to know that going ahead. And now Kickstarter has a feature where you can change the postage
country,
which we didn't have for years. So basically, you can say built in, if you're getting in Australia, sorry, but you have to add. Now, and they know that, too.
I have run into issues, though, and this might be something to look into. You know, you talk about pitfalls, where people have, I know, are international, and they were able to get through the system without having to pay the international extra shipping charge.
Yeah, I just skipped it this time. I was like, you know what? It's a new feature. I don't think it's ready yet. I'm skipping it. And that's all. And so I didn't deal with it.
So we ran into that a couple of times on our last one.
You mean if someone chose the wrong, like, set?
Well,
the
no, they said they were in Great Britain, and they didn't get charged that extra $20 that we would ask or whatever that would come in for them to...
I actually haven't heard that before, so...
So we ran into that a couple of times. It's not like rampant, thank goodness.
Yeah, no, but I mean, I can ask the guys who built it.
Yeah, maybe.
We've never had someone from Kickstarter on our panel, so we get to two at the same time. This is awesome.
Actually, I have a question, Craig. There's something I've noticed, because I do a lot of keeping track of the statistics for Kickstarters. For 1 year, I kept track of every single project in comics, games, and art, just to see like the ebb and flow.
We've got
over
a lot of time on here.
And so I don't sleep much.
Professional.
And so one of the things I've noticed is from 2014 to 2013, several categories, the total dollars pledged actually dropped, whereas the number of live projects increased dramatically because in the last year, Kickstarter kind of opened the floodgates for projects. They're a lot less strict on what can get in, what kind of projects can get in, right? They don't do the approval process anymore.
That's not quite true. There's an approval process. It's not really approval. It's making sure that you meet the Kickstarter guidelines. Because, and let me just digress for 1 second. So Kickstarter was created to help fund primarily artistic projects. So Kickstarter doesn't do charity projects. You know, other sites can do that. It's not really Kickstarter's remit. So basically, when you go through, it looks at, you know, are you violating any of the guidelines that you shouldn't be violating? So, like, you know, the vast majority of projects submitted, that used to be done manually. Somebody used to look at every single project and then go through. So now that's an automated process, but there are still guidelines to make sure that you meet, you know, what Kickstarter's intended purpose is for. But like, you can't do things like sell alcohol on Kickstarter because it's illegal. Primarily, you can't do illegal stuff on Kickstarter, and then Kickstarter checks to see if you're doing something illegal, and then says, you're probably doing something
illegal. Well, it seems like in 2014, especially like after the potato salad project, that was like a tipping point.
Yeah.
And then after that, you have some stuff in the comics section where there was a guy who wanted to raise money to produce a Batman pitch and fly to Burbank and pitch it to DC. And all on his page, it was using all existing Batman work. Well, it would never get funded, and it would never get made, and it was probably illegal. But you have projects like that a lot more often now that people have to sift through. So as backers, they're sifting through those projects, trying to find yours, which is a very valuable project that they need. And so that takes a lot of time and a lot of dollars away.
Did you have a... You had a question, though. I don't think we answered it. I feel like we talked so much.
Have you noticed that yourself? The increase of projects versus the dollars.
Well, what happened is that actually after... Well, this is esoteric, but we'll talk since...
I love it.
So after potato salad... Does everyone know what potato salad was? Somebody wanted a pet place.
Where were you when that project launched?
Yeah, they wanted like $10, and they raised like whatever, $50 or $100 or something like that.
$50,000, yeah, a lot. Flaming
cats.
But what happened is... We got flooded with potato salad projects because everybody in their world was like, hey, I can make potato salad. I want $50,000.
Right.
But none of those violated our guidelines. They were all legit. So what happens is when you see like a really big random project spike, you'll see a whole bunch of people piling after it trying to do the same thing. And then some of them fund and some of them don't.
It seemed like it wasn't as easy to do that like 2 years ago.
Here's the thing. It would have been if potato salad had happened 2 years ago, we would have gotten that influx and they would have been manually approved because they meet our guidelines.
As long as they meet the guidelines, everything's all right.
But I mean, the bell curve for projects and funding on Kickstarter, and not the bell curve, but the growth is just, we get more projects every day than we had the day before. So there's always more projects, but there's also always more backers. So we have about 8.5 million people have backed a project. About 2.5 million have backed multiple projects.
More projects, more backers.
More.
But the dollar level for certain categories is not growing. Is what I'm saying.
Overall, the dollar level has grown. It fluctuates by category. Like if you get like a Pebble Time, which just raised $20 million.
But I feel like you can't include tech because it's so wildly out of range.
Well, but then you had like Order of the Stick and comics that raised like $1 million and completely skewed comics. So it's every category experiences its version of stuff, but overall, there's never been a decrease in money distributed because you can't.
Just where
it's distributed, it's distributed.
We have a question over here. You there?
So this harkens back to setting it up so that people see your project and are interested in it. Uh-huh. So with comics, you can put all this artwork, right? What about books? How do you make that into...
So you're talking about prose literature?
Prose books.
I have not done anything like that. Do you have any advice on that?
Yeah, I mean, books is tough because, you know, usually you want a really good cover. I mean, the one thing you need on any Kickstarter, in my opinion, I mean, you don't need it, you can do without it, but is a really good piece of art. Because remember that 90% of the time when someone sees your Kickstarter, they're going to see it in that little baseball card on the site, and it's going to be artwork, the log line of the project, so you always want to make that super compelling.
Yeah, the thumbnail.
So like the thumbnail image. So you always want at least one really great image. If you're doing a book and you have no inside illustration, do a picture, like have a photograph of you at your keyboard or at the coffee. Like have some kind of imagery in there because imagery tells a story, right? Like a picture literally is worth 1,000 words, probably more. So art tells a story on your Kickstarter, and it's very easy for film, it's very easy for comics, it's very easy for tech. You know, you have the projects. I mean, you know, you see the tech projects that fund are often the ones that have really great imagery of the thing because, you know, that helps people visualize it. But get creative, you know, like, or here's pages from the manuscript, whatever it is.
And you can plan ahead and do, like, your book cover, and have maybe whoever's doing your book cover, make it a wraparound so you have a little more art. You can do things like that also.
I think, too, beyond that, you can also just be a good storyteller about why you're telling your, you know, why you're doing your project. I think that's an important part. You can do that in your video. You know, and you talk about, you know, the passion of, that you have to do this, or whatever it is that the story is of you being a maker of this. And that's really important, too.
Yeah, the Kickstarter is the story of you and your project.
Right.
The video is key, too. You want to make your video. I mean, I found anything over 2.5 minutes is worthless. Seriously.
Yeah, I recommend 2 to 3 minutes.
I spent, you know, my first one was 6 minutes long, and I spent more time talking about all the stuff that they would read about in the body of the text than really what was my passion. And then my last ones, I don't even talk in my Kickstarters. I just use words and inspire and talk about, you know, kind of just showcase what I want to do. And then I figure if they're going to read it, they're going to just come down and read it. I pay for the music. I'll go hunt down music. Pond 5 is great. It's got tons of royalty-free music to use that you can pay for. You're helping indie musicians by supporting their work, but at the same time, you get some of the best instrumental pieces that you can use all over the spectrum. And it's amazing how art, color, and music will affect somebody to go through and read your project. And if you look on it, the great thing about Kickstarter, it will show you how far they've actually watched your video into completion, how many people. And most people will probably only watch about the 30 to 50% mark, and once they're done, they either will continue reading to find the reward they want, or they will move on to something else.
The other thing, you just used a great word, which I really want to highlight, and that the three of you have, and that everybody who has a Kickstarter should have, is passion, right? The things that succeed on Kickstarter are where the creator is passionate and authentic, right? Yeah. Tell people why you're excited about doing your project. That will get them excited about it. And what I mean is authenticity. You know, sometimes you'll have someone who like has a celebrity friend or something, and they'll throw them in the video, but they have nothing to do with the project. It probably isn't really helping at all. You know what I mean?
So little kids and cats.
Yeah. That's my God. Kids, cats. The best Kickstarter videos are not massively produced. You know, with like all sorts of great lighting and all that stuff. It can be like people talking into their, you know, iPhone. As long as you are passionate and enthusiastic about it.
And something that you can do to help, because you're going in as a writer, not as an illustrator or anything, is you can do multiple videos. I would recommend your updates being videos and having more videos within your page so people can see what you're doing. You can even read from the book a little bit. Give them something visual, because the internet is a visual medium. It's not a let me read the text. Because people, when they read online, their mind comprehends things a little differently than having the actual book in their hand. It's two different ways of taking in information. But when it's visually stimulating that they can see it, they're far more receptive to what's going on.
Well, I think you said something important about your updates. And it's like when you design your project and you set it all up and you make your video, you're not done. And on your updates, you're going to continuously rework things. You're going to highlight features that people are kind of ignoring. You might redesign your page. I've redesigned my page in the middle of a project before because it just wasn't working. And so you're not done at all with your design or your page setup, or maybe even shooting videos. You'll probably shoot a few more videos, take pictures, and add them to your updates. That's what you have to do.
And by the way, send an email to Maris, M-A-R-I-S, at Kickstarter.com. She's a publishing expert. Tell her you saw me on a panel, Craig, and then say, hey, I want your advice on a book. She's the publishing expert at Kickstarter, and she'll help you out.
And something else to... what was that email? Who?
If you're doing a book, like a novel, like a prose book, email Maris, M-A-R-I-S, at Kickstarter.com. She's the publishing expert. So... comics, you can just write to comics at Kickstarter.com. That's the better one. But for Maris, there's publishing is a much smaller category. So Maris is your contact.
Say the music source again.
Music source? Well, I backed a music one. Oh, music source is font5.com. It's the one that I like. There's plenty of them out there. There's a lot of different ones.
There's another one called, sorry.
How do you spell that?
Pond, P-O-N-D, 5, letter 5.com. No, it's all good. No, it's Pond. I don't know why they called it that. They just thought they were cool. So it works for me.
And I use one called Infotech.
There's a couple things also I think that are really important to talk about that people don't realize. You know, we're talking about the ins and outs. It's an emotional roller coaster. You're going to have 2 or 3 days of just, wow, look at it go, and it's going to jump. And then you're going to have 3 weeks of lag. And then the last, it'll start picking it up. You know, that's just usually what happens. You're going to go from one end of the spectrum to the other of emotions. You're going to be, like, really excited. Then you get really frustrated.
It's exhausting, emotional.
And if you've got stuff going on also, you know, I was going through massive stress. I almost had a heart attack during this one. Seriously, I was at WonderCon, and I actually had to have a conversation with my crew. What would happen if Dad went down? And just the stress level was so high of what was going on. I made the mistake of going 60 days.
Oh, yeah.
60 days is too much. 45 days is too much. I'd say almost 30 days is too much.
30 days, can I talk?
Yeah, jump right in.
So what he's talking about is there's a phenomenon in Kickstarter that we call the trough, which is the first 3 to 5 and the last 3 to 5 days of any Kickstarter project are the most active. Anything in between that is you're in a very slow time where, you know, you're not going to see a lot of pledges. You're going to be wondering what's happening. We honestly haven't seen too much difference data-wise between 15 and 30-day projects. It just kind of extends the trough. Now, the flip side of that is if you have something that's taking off, like my Kickstarter was kind of a pretty steady climb, so I was getting a couple $100 every day. So if I'd shortened my trough, I would have shortened.
Right.
You know, so you kind of have to weigh the odds of, like... You know, but Greg Pak just did his 15 days, won $15,000, and raised $110,000. So Greg knows more than I do about Kickstarter.
Well, and then
you're not Greg Pak.
Yeah, that's
so
true.
Don't think that.
And then you run into the issue is after it funds, you're like, crap, I got to fulfill it. Seriously, and that is stress on its own.
Yeah, picture yourself in whatever your house, apartment is, like filling out hundreds of packages of books. And, you know, it can take a while. And, you know, like people, like... There was a Kickstarter, I can't remember, I was doing a panel at HeroesCon, and a guy, I wish I could remember his name, he may even be here, he wanted to raise $10,000 and raise $100,000 for a comic book. And he said, so the comics arrived in a semi-truck pulled up in front of my house and said, I have 3 pallets of books that weigh like 4 tons, where do you want them? He literally couldn't fit them in his house. So he was calling up people, and his friends would drive by. It was like a drug deal. Like, they'd drive by, and he'd hand them boxes of books, and they'd drive off. And he said he did nothing but fulfill comics for 6 months because he never in his wildest dreams thought he would raise $100,000. But don't forget, that's not $100,000 that goes to your pocket. That's $100,000 that goes to you printing and shipping and stuff.
Right, and whatever that's over is that, and that could be anywhere. We have one friend that raised $119,000, and he only got 10 grand after the end of it. You know, now that was kind of a little bit poor planning on a couple of things, but still, you got to realize you're not funding a lifestyle, you're funding your project.
Yeah, Kickstarter makes, I always say it's not about making money, it's about making projects. So you want to be, the main thing you get out of a Kickstarter is you get a project, you get a community that pops up around that project, which you can, as these guys do, go, you know, continue the relationship with other projects. And then also, a lot of times people will get... you know, like my friend Frank Barbieri kick-started a project for $2,000. Image picked it up. It's 5 ghosts. Now it's being picked up as a TV show by Universal Cable
Productions.
That's
a great example, because so, I think a lot of people look at the $100,000 Kickstarters and they focus on that. But if you look at this guy, I mean, he's got $2,000. That's not a very large Kickstarter at all. But look at all the great things
he's now has a full-time career in comics and a potential career in TV because he funded a $2,000
comic. That's a pretty interesting example.
And think of it, too, as an extension of your
tribe. Your business, I mean, and your tribe, because like for us, we all had our business, we were doing things on our own before we even did Kickstarter, and we're going to do things after Kickstarter, so it's really, really important that we, one, treat people really great. Our communication is a demonstration of how we're going to communicate with you as a customer in the future, so that's super important. And we're
you got to own your audience.
Yeah,
we're around after the Kickstarter too, and so that grows over time, and that's you can kind of use that Kickstarter to pull people into your tribe.
That's why all this is even possible, because now you don't need a publisher; you can directly interact with your audience and own them, carry them from project to project. You take care of them, cultivate it, grow it.
Yeah, and Jimmy Palmiotti, who's a very well-known comics creator, worked at Marvel, has done a lot of work for Marvel in DC. He's done 8 Kickstarters, and he basically he messages everyone like these guys do, right, who backed their first Kickstarter about the next one.
Ain't right. Use that like there's no tomorrow.
Oh, yeah, and Jimmy now will do 50%, his project will fund 50% in a day, purely on the fact that he's messaging the other, 10,000 people who backed his other projects, just like you guys, like your projects fund pretty quickly.
My last one funded in 14 hours.
Yeah.
So, hey, darling, you had a question.
All right. This is lightly digressing.
You can digress.
Are graphic designers previously? Can you talk about briefly the work that you did before and your transition, and like how long before you made the decision to end it in your first Kickstarter?
Well, mine was easy. I was an art director for a major firm, not in comics, for many, many years, 15 years. I helped take a company from $100,000 a year to $30 million a year. And they decided that they wanted someone younger and laid me off. So I decided that I was either going to survive and do what I've always wanted to do, or just mope and kind of struggle. I've got 5 kids. I'm surviving.
5 kids?
I am surviving. They're working
awesome.
The show, too. They're working the show.
He's got an army that works for him. They're awesome.
Dang right. But my passion is I've always wanted to do comics. I've always wanted to create art. I just don't have all my eggs in one basket, and that is important to understand. And kind of like Daniel and Paul, it's building a brand about you. And so during this time that I was working for someone else, I was building a brand about me the entire time. And then when everything kind of just split, I was already prepared to go on my own. It wasn't like, oh, here you're on your own. I was already prepared for it.
You have 5 kids.
I do, and they are incredible.
I'm expecting my first, which is why I said that.
Congratulations.
Like, oh, thanks. Yeah, but I'm like, oh my God, 5? Oh, thanks. I'll tell my wife. She really deserves it.
We didn't have them all at once, let me tell you.
I still
want to
know what he did.
So for me, I was a graphic designer, had a day job, and so I did crowdfunding for other books before there was Kickstarter, so I used our brand. So what I did is I kept my day job for as long as humanly possible, because you need that runway, right? If you just jump off, you only have how much money you have in the bank. So I kept the day job, and then worked. So I worked 40 hours for those guys, and worked 60 hours a week for me. And we would work endlessly. So I did that for 7.5 years.
Oh, yeah.
And did a couple, the Kickstarters aren't the way to quit the job, but the Kickstarters were just another way to
bring in product.
And keep growing that. So it's a long haul to make a living, but you have to stick with a plan and make decisions that are best for your long-term success, not short-term cash.
He didn't even have time to shave. I mean, that's how.
Years ago, and I think that with this career as an illustrator or whatever career you choose on, years ago when I was at San Diego for the first time just as a fan walking around, I ran into an illustrator who asked me a very specific question. I'm going to ask you the same question. He said, how bad do you want it? And before I could tell him realistically how bad I wanted it, he says, you can't tell me. He goes, show me how bad you want it. Because you will figure out a way to make it happen, regardless of how many jobs you work. If you want it bad enough, you're willing to put the time in to create it. And once you get to that point, doors start to open. But you have to make that decision whether you're going to walk through that door or not. And that's a scary choice to make. And I think all of us here have gone through that deal. We want it bad enough that we're willing to do 13, 14 shows a year to meet new people. We're willing to talk among ourselves to figure out how to make it better. And we're willing to just get out there and figure out how to make it work and buck the trend you have to go through a publisher, or you have to go through that. And Kickstarter has literally made it possible for us to create product that alleviates a burden of us having to front money for a product. And that's the benefit to me of what Kickstarter can do, because now I have books that I can sell that are already paid for, and I have fans that got the book first, and I have new fans that are finding me through the books that I'm creating now. You darling?
So, when you're brand new, and this is your first thing, how do you sort of break out of the whole friends and family thing?
When I started, I was working as a graphic designer at this terrible company. we made brochures and catalogs. And
I like those.
They're terrible catalogs. I just kind of used them to learn. So they paid me to learn, essentially. I learned about overseas printing.
Yep.
I learned about four-color offset. And I was doing, and Travis did similar, I was doing my comic as a webcomic online. So when by the time I came ready to print my first book, I didn't even tell my family. I don't even have much family. I was adopted as a kid, so there's not many people to tell. And so when I went to put my first book online, it was all strangers, and it worked. And I was very surprised, but at the same time, I had done the work. I'd spent over a year online. Every time someone would comment, I would comment back.
Yep.
I had a day job at the time, so I'd pay to have ads on other people's comics. I was just continuously, for a year, putting time and money into it. It was an investment. And then when I finally went to print on that first book and then went to Kickstarter later, that investment paid off.
And what's key, and I think you and I had the same instance, we both had our books done before
That's
we
very
kickstarted.
Helpful.
Yeah.
And I'm the same way. I'll back a project if it's almost done. I will not back a project if it is in the thought process.
Yeah, don't do this. I'd like to do a comic, but I'm not going to start it until you guys pay me to do it.
Yeah, we've
that
got a friend.
Really work.
Yeah. Can I actually add one thing to that? Hang on, let me just interrupt real quick, because this is super
and you're
important
the next one.
To everybody. Is Kickstarter doesn't work if you don't know anybody and nobody knows who you are and you just put up something and hope that someone will find it, because there's thousands of projects that run on the site at any given time. You kind of have to start with both your personal and professional networks. And the things that work great on Kickstarter are direct emails to people, right? The number one driver of pledges is email. So if you can find a way to build up an email list, or having like a web comic for 3 years ahead of time is genius, because you've got 3 years of people who are invested in it. The other thing is Facebook followers and Twitter followers. And oddly enough, although I usually don't say anything too kind about Facebook, Facebook drives more.
I got more
pledging
traffic through Facebook this last one than I had on any other project.
Yeah, Facebook, for whatever reason, Facebook is better at driving Kickstarter pledges than Twitter. They're both good, but Facebook is better.
Or every project has a little chart at the end that tells you where your backers came from. And I would say at the beginning, a larger proportion of my backers came from Kickstarter itself, referral pages within Kickstarter. And now a much larger portion comes from me driving that traffic from my fan base.
So sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you.
So when is the best time to put a project on Kickstarter?
Not during Christmas. Seriously.
So project's lifespan is near end?
Towards the end.
As far along the process as you can, especially so you can show stuff. But actually, you actually kind of hit upon one thing that's people always say, what's the best time of year to launch a Kickstarter? There is no best time except Christmas. Like, literally, don't do it around Christmas and Thanksgiving. But literally, like, January, March, June, whatever. Everything is fine as long as you're not launching it on a holiday, because people have to be at a computer or on a mobile device on Kickstarter to back your project. So we had somebody who wanted to launch a project at midnight on Friday, and we were like, well,
who's going to
see
it?
No one's going to see that. And then the Reading Rainbow guys, actually, they wanted to do a 30-day campaign, and they said, what do you think of our campaign? And I said, well, it's great, except you were literally ending on July 4th, which is one of the major holidays where everybody goes away from a computer. So then they extended their campaign 5 days to not end on July 4th. But that didn't, you can span a holiday, you just don't want to start or end on a holiday. You definitely don't want to start or end on Christmas.
Right, because those are your most important days anyways, the start and the finish. That's when more people are going to just organically see it through the Kickstarter search engines and stuff.
And if you can set it up to run during con schedules, that's even better. All my Kickstarters, I've been able to run it during two conventions. So you find out, no matter how many emails you send out, or how many people go through Facebook, there are always fans and people that go, I never knew you were doing a Kickstarter.
Yeah, oh my God, yeah.
I
get that all the time.
I work at Kickstarter, ran a Kickstarter, and people are like, I didn't know you did a Kickstarter.
So seriously.
Really?
So if you can use the conventions and then just, you know, PS Print, if you want to use them, that you can get up cards that are super cheap. And you just run, you know, and hand them out. But utilize every opportunity. You know, and that's where the planning comes in. I hope the one thing that you've all got out of this is plan. Plan, 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 plan.
Yeah, do your research online, because we could talk for another hour about different details, but all that stuff's online. Someone's already done it, written articles about it.
And the other thing is I think our time is running short, but the other thing is you can come ask us. You know, the cool thing about Kickstarter is so many of us that have had successful projects are still willing to talk about what worked, what didn't, what you liked. I mean, you can ask questions. Many of us have written articles about it, of what we liked, what we didn't like, and we're very honest about it. But you'll find that as indies, we're very open to that world of communication.
There's also a new feature on Kickstarter called Campus, which if you go to homepage and you look on the bottom, there's a link to Campus. Campus is about basically Kickstarter graduates like these guys who are online giving you their advice. By the way, a quick tip for in terms of like you know, planning is, I know somebody who wrote all their emails about their Kickstarter, like they put it in Gmail and they did them all as drafts, and they had like 200 people that they were going to email. Then they launched their Kickstarter and then they just opened their drafts and went send, 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 so that you built up that momentum right away from the moment you launch, which is something you want to do. Now, these guys probably have mailing lists and also their previous...
No, I use my Kickstarter group.
I was going to say, and their previous Kickstarters are a great way to do that.
Best thing I ever did, though, and I love this, it's my secret, is I send out to all my pro friends and other friends just to look at my Kickstarter. I don't care if you back it or not. I let them know that. I'm not asking them to back it. I don't want to sound desperate or anything. But I tell them just because Kickstarter's got a great feature. People can preview the project before it gets launched so that you can get feedback whether the project is good or not, or what you need to change. So every time I've launched, I've had 150 people launch it with me, and that was ideal.
And when they do that preview feature, they can click a button that says notify me when it launches.
Leave feedback, because I'm dyslexic, so I get edits too. You in the back had a hand first. I have no idea. We ended up on one, and I just said, okay.
You could ask our opinions, and then you could ask him.
The criteria is literally somebody on the staff saw your project and liked it and thought it was cool and picked it. There's no, like, auto, you know,
it feels pretty random.
There's it's 105 people that work at Kickstarter, and any one of us can staff pick.
I mean, it's nice when it happens, but, like, you're not doing it. I'm not telling somebody, hey, pick mine. It just happens.
Do really cool. I mean, I think I met you because I came up to your table.
It was
Emerald City a year ago, just because I thought his project was so cool. And then, you know, I went and the next one you did, I was like, oh, staff.
Yeah, it was funny because it was like a real person that works at Kickstarter. It was pretty nice to put a face to the company. Yeah.
That's awesome. You in the back?
Well, a little bit different than comics. Do you have any advice or suggestions for people who want to do tabletop games?
I actually did tabletop games, and Travis has been a part of a tabletop game too. One of the things I probably would have done differently was make sure you have a testable prototype as close to completion as you can and send it out to multiple people to get reviews. Because with books, people are going to look at the art and they're going to like it or not. But with a game, it's a little harder to know if it plays well, so they're going to want some reviews.
Luke@Kickstarter.com, who has also run several campaigns, is the games expert. Email Luke. Say, hey, check this out, and he'll look over your product.
Do we have a games follow-up question since we didn't...
We're actually over time. We got cut off. So, seriously, if you want, come talk to us. We're here all 3 days. We'll tell you where our booths are at.
Yeah, what's your...
12:15 in this room over here. I'm in.
You are...
I'm just wandering.
He's floating. I am at booth 611, and I'll do free sketches for anybody that comes by.
I'm at 607 Steam Crow, steamcrow.com.
Thank you very much for having us.
Thanks, guys.